very much for Blair. Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here. I'm very grateful to Paul, who put up with confusion and delays and all kinds of things. And my third time lucky, he asked, and I'm just so glad that this time I was able to come. I'm not going to say very much. Stephen's already said far too much about it. So I'll kind of launch into this collection, which I really haven't yet had the opportunity to read in Cork, so I'm really happy to. Maybe one or two new bits and pieces, but not very much. I'm actually quite organised for a change. Usually I'm terrible, as my friend Paul here will tell you. I hooster around looking for poems and things and can never find them. But I made a list, and I kind of decided that it probably wouldn't be a bad idea, and I hope you agree. I'm sort of going to talk about, going to read poems, first of all, really to do with family, and then after that, quite unapologetically, the people who are most important to me in my life, and then maybe places, because quite a lot of the poems in this collection deal with people and places. And that's probably more than enough to say. The collection is dedicated to my grandparents, to my grandmothers, my two grandmothers. So I will sandwich the family poems with poems to them, as it were. And I hope that you'll enjoy them. Now, the first one is on page 10. Yes. I have to blame Doghouse for the small print. Anyway, it's called Out of Reach. Here I am, Grandma, reaching back through a lifetime to the safety of your kitchen. Knee high, I trail you to the pantry, reaching to a shelf, you hand me down a china jug to be my very own. It survived you, for you died when I was 5. My last memory, you, frail, reaching to a bedside shelf to find me 0.5 crown. In my mother's pantry then, your jug gleamed through a glass door. I never knew who reached in, from whose hand it fell on the terrazzo floor. Time now to probe every crevice, gather pieces. And the next poem, and the next two poems actually, are really written for my husband, Fergal McAuley. The first one is called Fish. It's written on Fraser, but I have an Irish translation as well. It's, I think, self-explanatory, something that happened. Pagan Shochel Chuinen. Pidavluen a karasit. Ach ni raf puin leshgar ar hawael dan shalach ar inno diffige ach rihar da yigil i dro an styre go cheim le cheile chula seher banole an proin is chlor is tuad lecharim shomwyd bertig a winno ge borati tu ar bish chan an tumtas a rind lomse fiche o gudurish a gawael a trosan trig na portge erabal in oirde nach as a rode i lorna madne ach Tosk na tourish ar an madarin rua ni reba hile. Porta na folaba a sheena chi falarin in a lui na luchar. Chula makala da ron an foshta. Fish o heil kelta padra chan solish. Tosa is misha in rhyme an a luish. And the translation. Vision. This I remember. Though your knee hurt, you did not hesitate when the fox streaked by, but raced for the stairs 2 steps at a time. I heard your hard breathing, the urgency in your voice as you called out to me. We stand together now at an upstairs window, you strain in your eagerness to share the wonder with me. A young one, you said, going that way through the fields, tail aloft, a sight to behold in mid-morning. But no sign remained of the small red stranger, just empty fields stretching away from us. In a wee snalucher, an echo came from a children's song, a vision revealed from a hidden world. You and I, facing the void. there's no need to but I appreciate it very much. The next one is a sort of lighter take on the same relationship. It's called Myth in Monaghan, if I can find it on page 46. Yeah, this I was lucky enough to have a bursary to spend a little time in Anna McCary, where quite a lot of this book actually got written, even though it sort of forges the last 30 years of my life in a way. But I kind of became more serious about it around about that time. But while I was there, this little event happened. Myth in Monaghan. The little black bull peering through the fence reminds me of you, his maleness, his otherness, and the bar between us. A queen caused havoc in Ulster once over a bull. Has the bull of her contention escaped from Cooley to haunt me here in Monaghan? Because she ignores the oracle who muttered, I see crimson, I see blood, slaughter transmuted to story, the brown bull of Cooley becoming the indelibly black bull of Lebrake, peering through the fence at me now, showing how even a solitary walk on these lonely roads of Monaghan can lead to an encounter with you. And now I'm moving on to embarrass my son, who was here tonight. The next poem is written for him, and it's called Bone Meditation, and it quotes a wonderful American poet called Isabella Gardner, and she was from Boston. She lived between 1915 and 1981, and I believe there's a great museum in Boston. I've never managed to get there, but I'd love to sometime. Anyway, it's called Bone Meditation. Home from school, my grey-clad stargate gazer sends my heart into orbit. Unfazed by monsters and hieroglyphics, he is coolly earthed on our floor, a stone in a green field. Spinning, I probe for words, and then remember Isabella, who searched the bones and wrote, the spoon of longing stirs my marrow. I think of bones that ache and bones that sing, of Mauritanga and its tribal lore, of the bone weary, nothing left to give. But so long as the spoon stirs Isabella, I know in my bones I live. And the next one is for my daughter. You see, I have planned to leave her out of it, or they'll be jealous. And it actually describes something kind of hair-raising that happened when I was about to give birth to more. We were living on Inishere at the time, and it was winter and very stormy, and when the nurse decided that it was time for me to go, she didn't want this problem on her hands. There were no boats, there were no planes, there was no way off the island, so we had to sort of hitch a lift on an old wooden boat that some young people had rather foolishly taken out on that night. And this tells the story. We got there, and she's alive to prove it, and all is well, thank God. It's called Sea Maiden, and it was inspired by the time she was leaving home to go away to college, and then I remembered stuff, and I went back. Excuse me a second, I do have water somewhere, don't I? I mean, I don't know what I did with it. Gumaleshke, I've got to move the map now. Thanks. Thank you. Sea Maiden. At the station in Tralee, we say goodbye. You, city-bound, reluctant. I drive to where small boats lie at rakish angles in the mud. In a sheer, a winter night. You poised for birth. I ponderous on coiled rope on a cramped deck sailing for Galway. Far out from harbour lights, we ran aground and waited hours to be lifted by the tide. Were you happy even then to be islanded, out there in all weathers, under a huge, unbounded sky? And her name, Muirin, actually means fair-haired sea maiden, because she nearly did get born at sea. The next poem is for my dad, on page 56. Working my way through the family, folks. Get to know them all before my dad. Sadly, my dad is no longer with us. But when we lived in all these wonderful places, and he really used to enjoy coming to visit. And this poem, he came back to visit, I think, one more time after he had gone to somewhere better. It's called Meeting My Father. You were there, palpably, corporeally there in the dream from which I woke that morning. My tears, as I wrapped my arms around you, nuzzled my face into your warm neck, spilling over into waking time. I expected then to see you in my room, suitcase still in hand, containing the trousers, polo shirts and jumpers so carefully ironed and folded by my sister. A bottle of Paddy, forbidden to you now, to be handed over later with pleasure in the thought of our partaking. You'll have browsed the bookshop shelves at the station, seeking something to please your hard-to-please daughter. You'll have met, as usual, a lovely person on the train, swapped stories, had the crack, and arrived hopeful and expectant as a little boy. The next poem has a certain, it's about something that happened at home, but you know, my sister is part of it in a way, and she became quite ill a few years ago, so it has a, she's fine now, thank God, but it has a sort of a renewed poignancy for me, this poem, since that happened. It's called Fallen Angel. When our cat leaped on the window ledge and wrapped her body around the loop-playing ladro angel, I held my breath. One false move would leave my angel lying in fragments on the floor. I reached to lift her, and in the act, my elbow knocked the loop player from the shelf. There was no sound of breaking depth, just a low thud as he made contact with the cork tiles. But when I looked, I saw a small decapitated head roll under the table. Nearby, a piece of flowing white porcelain gown, beneath which peeped two perfect feet. And finally, the upper torso, wings intact. I sat and cried, not for the loss of one more ornament, but for the absent sister who had given it to me, helpless before my own destructiveness. This sudden disintegration and all our fragile, fractured lives. And now the next poem, page 53, is actually for her daughter. I was invited to attend her graduation in Cornwall, where she went to study textile design, and it was a wonderful occasion. This poem is for Bronya. It's called Light Conferred. For miles in May, she walked the cliff path to find and book the perfect restaurant. We sit by the window this last evening in June as light fades slowly over a Cornish bay. Outside, people idle at tables of bleached wood under sea blue umbrellas. Her eyes are midnight blue. Earlier, we viewed her pale textured hangings, woven with fibres inspired by sea and stone. A tanker painted red and green is anchored in the bay. While light leaks, we watch its garish colours turn to grey. Tonight, she is animated and intense. For a moment, I meet my mother's gaze in the eyes of my sister's child and wonder if her might have been is here and now at last. And the last one from the family sequence is for my other grandmother. Funny, the only poems I noticed, or just noticed that tonight for the first time, that really deal with my childhood are the two about my grandparents. After that, it sort of moves into things, people and things, places in adulthood. So maybe that's something to be explored rather psychiatrist couch rather than here. But anyway, from an album. A black and white snapshot falls from an album. There you are, tinted by memory. Fresh from your dip, ring-a-ring-a rosy, first down in the sea after 70 summers. Your blue-green swimsuit faded and worn, you rise from the waves, Aphrodite reborn. A red tartan rug, a hot cup to warm us, set home in your chariot, a blue Morris Minor. A penny for a cotton ball, a halfpenny for a needle, you rhyme us, rock us, wheedle us to sleep. In my midlife dreams, I still can see you, releasing your bum, gold white hair gleaming. Now I coil my own hair, refuse to cut it, reluctant to part with childhood colour. Your sea blue eyes stare back from my mirror, fading gold hair falls to my shoulders. You. Page 39. Okay, this is to sort of, I suppose, in a way, I threw this poem in here to sort of to introduce places. I spent quite a bit of time in Dublin as a young person, both in college and working, and I loved Dublin. But this isn't really Dublin so much as where Dublin meets the sea. And it's I think it's kind of slightly amusing poem that was inspired by a story I was told by a guy down in West Kerry. It's called Shark. Last night, I heard how a man, a deep sea diver, was attacked by a shark near Poolbeg Lighthouse. A poor beagle, nosing up the liffey. No knowing who was more surprised, the man, flattened against the underwater wall, or the shark, who grazed him with his sandpaper skin. When later the stricken man peeled off his wetsuit, a raw red burn mark was revealed, seared by a shark, whose eye, magnified on camera, provided the only vital clue as to who or what came hurtling out of the dark. Sharks are plentiful around our coast. Mostly they mind their own business, which has nothing to do with eyeballing men in the mouth of an Olivia Florivel. This one is, it's written in Irish, translated into English. It's set in this year, but in more recent years, not when we actually lived there, but I went back for a sort of an artist convention that took place there, and there were a few things going on that really sort of struck me. One was a wonderful dance performance by Fergus O'Cahoor, whom I'm sure many of you will have heard of. He's a wonderful dancer and choreographer from the Ring West, but now living in London. And the other was a film by a young woman called Bonnie Keboyne, who's from Cork, from Oisín Keboyne's daughter. She made a wonderful film, which was, I think she photographed or filmed it from inside a train, and it was at night time, and the lights were beautiful, and just all of these things sort of melded in my head, and eventually became this poem called Aileen or Ilon. Blas nis mair, machine a clerska, behi gebuirif, uolach an uidnish, kio na farige, langkeild an fluke. An mofer an rinkjör in aon tuloin. Train a sheer blushach ter skol on artene, sain shakarach in a mirage sprechernach, malen a hoige o ilan mara. An mashtfer an rinkjör in aon tuloin. Ebert na man a yen tlocha dog ri, folly more himpel, dait in a ruini, cobernir tide, ke a vreig, ke ta tregehe. An rinkjör in a vrach gyal in aon tuloin. Alien Tory theory, Cowell or Bubble, a frastus na tiachta, a corb na bingani, la cahat na canary, his cave hope of Ottaway. Carp an rinchora in a chord a keshta in Al and Tuloin. Translated, art on an island. The taste of blackberries blows my mind, the lowing of cattle freights my loneliness, the sea mist smothers me. with the dancer drowned in the river Sulan. Inside the theatre, a train in perpetual motion is projected on a screen. City lights, a glimmering mirage, entice the young folk from their island home. Will the dancer be baptized in the river Sulan? The sacrifices of women make stones of their hearts. Walls entrap and divide. The tide whispers, who has abandoned you? Who the abandoned one? The dancer, a bright trout in the river Sulan. Artists ponder, where is our public? Serving in guest houses, earning the wherewithal to visit the Canaries. Who's to blame them? The dancer's body forms a question mark in the river Sulan. And the next poem is for a great man called Domhnach Hamish Oddrysgioil. Some of you will remember him. He was a poet and a Seanchaí and a writer. He used to write regular articles in the Irish Times, although he hardly ever left the island of Cape Clear where he lived. And we spent 5 years on that island and were privileged to get to know him. And this poem, sadly, it kind of documents his report, writes about his funeral, because he eventually did leave us, and he's a great loss. It's called Domhnach Hamish Oddrysgioil. Irelig an Iloin, tá scéal sa féin, fé fríon na gloch, fé ait sa fiddle. Hias fa chún an bód ar amrahan ar mringlódi is ar sail. An lá úd a chanopé, trelag cata ar an gé, dahnias nar a vada ver siolfi a vaile sligón a chrip. Nias deadrim weid, o sgiobach uing ar villa is ar sí, a hó cardan clihe hús i gomalón, onar eich sé siro iat is rôl dag dag. And the translation. In an island graveyard, each stone face contains its own story. Below in the harbour floats the symbol and pivot of our ways. That day I saw him, small, defeated on the pier. I knew that soon she would bring back only the shell of him. By the grave, a piper elbows a lament. We are poorer now. Robbed of our poet and sage, who built a cairn of stones in Comalón, marking the spot from where he viewed Baghdad. And that was a very different vision of Baghdad from the one that we sadly have now. This, you know, it was all the mystery of the Orient is what it meant to him then. Am I doing okay? Are you tired of me?
No. Not yet, baby.
You can start throwing stuff anytime. I'll disappear off that thing.
We'll get no shoes anyway. I know Doug X really plays
well. Okay, where was I going? I tell you what, I have a poem for Cork City as well. It's actually a poem. It's about a friend of mine, Kate Buckley is her name. She's a lovely artist originally from Mallow, who now lives in New Zealand. She's gone and married a New Zealander and moved out there. But she'll be coming and going, and you'll hear more of her. But anyway, some years ago, she had an exhibition here in Cork, and she invited me to name some of her paintings, which was a great privilege, and I had great fun doing it. So the poem is kind of about the exhibition, and I kind of worked in, a bit like your five words, I worked in some of the names of the pictures that I had christened. It's in English, but it's actually called Ishka Fé Hollif, and you kind of find out why, I think, I hope, before the poem is over. Anyway, Ishka Fé Hollif. The sky is on fire, the river molten. In an upstairs gallery in a city of spires hang images spawned in a brooding Kerry lake. Light plays on lift of mountain, shifts to reveal an arch of back, a languorous coupling of land and water. Beneath the tinkle of glasses and chatter of guests, a slow undercurrent, Ishka Fé Hollif. Time dissolves into stillness. Grief melts at heart's core. Light penetrates, forging. In a former convent cell, the artist closeted lifts her brush, applies pure pigment to paper, and surrenders to that rigorous and mysterious alchemy. I'm sure you all know what Uisge Féin Hallamh means, you know, kind of, it's literally water under the ground, but also, what would be the other way of describing it? Which is when there's water under the ground, when it's something going on, what's the word for it?
Undercurrent.
Thank you very much, undercurrent. Great. Yes, the next poem is called Driving to Dunclean, and it's actually the one that Matthew Sweeney selected, and I'm kind of very chuffed that he did for that publication we mentioned earlier. This is where I now live, and this is just about driving home from work after having a chat with a friend. Something about the way you listen, the way we laugh at ourselves and one another, sends me home smiling. Leaning back, arms outstretched to the wheel, I climb the path road through a flaming tunnel of Mungrisha. Nothing seems to matter except the particular way those gilt-edged clouds crown the dark mountain. Two girls in bright t-shirts freewheel towards me. I crest the hill. Below me, the blaskets, moody blue, familiar, float on a silver sea, marvelling how, out there, nothing really changes but the light. And the next is also kind of a blasket poem, but it's a very different one. It's not in this collection, actually. It's in Real Imaginings, which is an anthology of writing from Kerry, edited by Tommy Frank O'Connor, and published by Doghouse. And it's kind of set in a particular time, I suppose, but I hope it has some relevance, even any time. It's a flashback in anger. Rain veils the mountain, moves past my window, sheet-like, filmic. Last night we turned the clocks back, adjusted our quota of light, recession bites. It's been a strange week. Even here, so far west, we nod to the next parish across the water, more attuned to their election saga than our own dramas. We reel from the righteous wrath of pensioners unleashed in a Dublin church. Politicians routed as were Pharisees from the synagogue by an incandescent Christ. Elsewhere, a frame from a 50s camera flickers, is stilled. Yet, here they come again, a stately procession, bent shoulders, gnarled hands, clutching buckets, misshapen parcels, winding their way up that steep incline from the harbour. Everything they ever knew behind them now, an island sheeted in mist, empty, a mainland life ahead, forever mystic. They grew old here, stooped over small fires. I doubt if any of them glimpsed the tiger's tail as it passed. Those who lived long enough to claim a medical card would scarcely have used it. Hardly to the end, they said little, saw much, mulled over their memories, and moved on quietly when their time came. Meanwhile, the state battles for their island home, and sums inconceivable to them line legal pockets, alienate friends. They look back from the small pockets allotted to them in a hillside relic, from where perhaps they see it all differently now. Have maybe finally unearthed their own ire. And the last few poems are all set in a place that became kind of special to me in more recent years, where I've been very lucky to have had the opportunity to mind a house and some wonderful dogs about an hour from Venice, which is a nice place to be. And I have found it a very inspiring place, and I've managed to write a bit. That's kind of one of the things I like to do when I'm there, as well as minding the dogs. This one is called September in Venice, and actually it's of course from my time there that I've got, you know, the book is named for Canals of Memory or the Canals of Venice. It's a magical place, as I know you're all aware. All night, islands float in and out of my mind. The blasket sound merging in a dream with the blue Venetian lagoon. In a sheer, wet walls of grey stone swear off small fields, a seagull's cry from these dusty, sun-drenched campos. Down a narrow canal, a gondola glides. Its curving shape contains a curve. Water laps against ancient palaces, caresses the landing stage. A naval nudges into view. Landlocked, I miss the ocean. Islanded, crave a city's embrace. Here, in this dream place, this intricate marriage of land and water, I trawl the canals of memory, hauling long-forgotten fragments of a life out under Adriatic light. And the last one in this collection is also set in Venice. And it's the second last poem I read for you. So you can start. Because God is one, don't finish it. After the fall. From the belfry tower of San Giorgio Maggiore, the city of islands spreads below us, veined with water. Toy boats ply the canals. The lagoon stretches lazily to the Lido. We search maps, dredge memories for names. San Servolo, San Lazzaro, a gap in stone frames San Marco, Duomo, Doge's Palace, Campanile, where perpetual queues swelter for an overview less splendid than ours. We are smug escapees from hordes and heat high over La Serenissima. Encased in glass, we descend dreamlike through stone, admire its cool beauty, exit to where the reconstructed angel rests, shock etched on his shattered face. We're all fallen angels, I tell him, and turn to a scattering of postcards on the table. Scenes from San Giorgio, Last Supper, Manna from Heaven, Christ Crucified. I find an armored knight on horseback, George himself, with flowing hair and tilted spear, pinning a dragon down. Days later, I send it to a friend who sometimes speaks to me of dragons. Meanwhile, around me, lizards multiply on villa walls, forked lightning darts across the sky, waiting their moment, webbed feet tread water. And finally, can you bear with me for one more? Thank you. This one is called Adventures in the Veneto. It's the latest Poetry Island review just out. And it's a longish poem, but I get through it fairly quickly. It's actually it's dedicated to a wonderful lady whom I met in Treviso. She was teaching English there all her life, and sadly she passed away since this poem was written, but she did see it. She had actually asked me for it, as you'll find out in the poem. Her name was Ursula Neary. So for Ursula. June, not yet Bloomsday. Treviso, not Trieste. Side by side in San Nicolo, before the Concerto Meditazione with organ and soprano, she talks of her childhood home near San Dimalstrand, of how she followed a lover here a lifetime ago and found she loved the place but not the man. Piccola, frail, she laughs as she relates her story. Buonasera, buonasera, she greets friends and students who welcome me in the fluent English she had brought to them, then asks, would you write me a poem with oidness in it? You know how they say at home, there's an oidness on me. I think it's a lovely word. Queenine er an oor yellanuk a vrahase, skull on oidness. cloche bog do ekehe mar lian toin dawon ale shinta har charpoin shanavod ekadier ready namon gach kaunaka in a uig ishkiu in feinit eg na eg dridam leshen lo nor not nat meter aun no asius. I remember the last time I felt it, the shadow of loneliness, a soft, invisible cloak stretched like a spider's web over the bodies of old boats at Cavier, the cemetery of boats, each one in its own watery grave, mouldering, moving towards the day when we will no longer be aware of them. They had their glory days, plying the feeder from Treviso to Venice, bearers of bricks, of grain, of the sun-ripened produce of the Veneto plain, wide and lumbering, pulled by oxen, by horses, to where the river empties herself, and they yielded their goods and chattels to the merchant city. At this bend in the river, this backwater, they lie half submerged in the shallows of their own private lagoon. Spectrum, a prow here, a stern there, skeletal ribs protrude from the water, abandoned, their largesse apparent even in death. Even in death they serve, metamorphosed into islands where green shoots spring out of river silt and clay. In their barred bellies they freight a forest now, which in turn invites life in carnival variety. Go ala, doge it dagaresa, Evile na hoite, Bevan si der hurtini an uignish, Ek shola gamaul o chela, Nochten si raiach na nuntas. Two swans, Doge and Dagaretha, in charge of the place, they grasp the curtains of loneliness, sailing slowly away from each other, they reveal a vista of wonders. The place teems and bustles, families of ducks conduct their business, we laugh at the frantic paddling of the young, watch them waddle onto dry land aboard a boat. On another, a coot's nest fits snugly where branches fork. We count five eggs, watch the antics of the hatched as they venture little by little into the vast chambers of their houseboat home, contained but never safe from marauding American rats, living, like us, in the shadow of death. But not lonely. Not uignach. Ersko a chela, bahaha is kohaha, lashtig the hanavoid, a lion evokar a chela, flahuel is buon, few are lava a mo. Interdependent, born and nourished inside old boats that lie side by side, generous and immortal, even on their deathbed. For Neil Mahabharata.